following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
Time for the Broken Sea Audio Production OTR Swag Cast.
Welcome back to the Swag Cast. This is Bill Holwig, and tonight we're going to feature The Vanishing Point. Vanishing Point was an anthology radio drama series from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting System, and ran from 1984 until 1986, and then under a varying array of subtitles until 1990 or so. Vanishing Point was created and produced by Bill Lane of Toronto, Canada. And as a side note, in 1988, Canada's National Radio Corporation broadcast a series of 30-minute radio dramas based on short stories of J.G. Ballard. For its long-running program, The Vanishing Point. The writers commissioned to create the dramas included Lawrence Russell, A Question of Reentry, The Dead Astronaut, Margaret Hollingsworth, The Cloud Sculptors of Coral D, Brian Wade, Low-Flying Aircraft, and News from the Sun, Paul Milken, Having a Wonderful Time, and James R. Wallen, Escapement. Lauded at the time, these forgotten gems explore the dramatic aspects of J.G. Ballard's early short stories within an auditory medium. Vanishing Point was first introduced to me by the good old groovy cat, the Zombie Astronaut. Great show, cool stuff. I'll just surprise you with what I'm going to run tonight. And as always, the Avengers. Enjoy.
The Stories of J.G. Ballard. Tonight, the Cloud Sculptors of Coral D.
Of all the portraits we were to carve, the strangest were the portraits of Leonora Chanel. She arrived at Coral D one afternoon last summer to watch the cloud sculptors. Later, her portraits carved in a whirlwind were to weep their storm rain upon the corpses of their sculptors. But I should begin with the gliders, since they are where it all started. The gliders I built from lathes and joists I found among the sliding sand and abandoned buildings on the floor of the fossil sea near the coral towers. The towers rose like white pagodas beside the highway to Lagoon West, the home of Leonora Chanel. Yes, the story begins with these gliders, with Petit Manuel and with Nolan. They came into the studio, long ago abandoned by some artist. I was using it as a hangar.
Señor, allow me to introduce Mr. Nolan. I am Petit Manuel, acrobat, and as you can see, dwarf. Very ugly, not a pleasant sight. I hope you will excuse me. Oh, what has happened to your leg, señor?
A break, nothing that time in this damn plaster cast won't heal. Hey, Mr. Nolan, please to... Charming. Has he ever come close enough to speak?
Oh, yes. You are a pilot?
Was. Not anymore. How did you guess?
Each of your gliders has a cockpit.
Oh, he can speak. Yes, Mr. Nolan, gliders have cockpits.
But you cannot fly.
Very observant.
With silver iodide, we could... carve the clouds.
Carve the clouds? What are you talking about?
Mr. Nolan is an artist.
Oh, artist? All right, then. Show me your colors. And he did. Yes, he did.
Señor, shore. You see?
Yes, I saw.
Nolan sails. He sails among the clouds like a butterfly, yes? He is a genius.
He's a fool. You were more of a fool to follow him. You don't take risks at this game, Manuel. It's the first rule of flying.
You don't?
Absolutely not, you ugly little bastard.
Up there, I am no longer a hunchback. Up there, I am a bird. Soon I will outfly Nolan. We will form a team. Maybe we find a third flyer. The tourists will come to see us. We will become rich.
I doubt it.
We will be the cloud sculptors of Coral D. We will be your wings. You will be our head. Nolan will find us a third.
Major Parker, meet Charles Van Eyck. He's a headhunter.
Maidenheads.
This way, Van Eyck. I'll show you the machines, and then with the Major's permission,
Where did you find him, Manuel?
Leave it to Nolan.
What do you know about him?
He comes here to Vermilion Sands every summer to make the tourists happy. The lady tourists. We will have good times. Lots of money till the end of the summer. Many beautiful cloud sculptures over the top of Coral D.
All summer I watched them. We were a success. The crowds came. We met Leonora on an afternoon near the end of the season. There were very few tourists now, and often Manuel would go up alone, leaving Nolan to drink in his hotel, while Van Eyck disappeared for a few days with some widow or divorcee. But that afternoon, the four of us drove out to Coral D.
See? See, the clouds are waiting for us. Smile, senor. Smile.
I'll smile later, Manuel. There's a couple of cars parked. Go to it and make sure they don't get away. Get up there, Nolan.
I don't need to be told, Major.
The three gliders revolved like lazing birds above Coral D. Nolan was in the lead in his black-winged glider, climbing straight to the crown of Coral D, while Van Eyck soared to and fro below him. Behind them came little Manuel.
It's on them. I think
he flew with his twisted knees, huge arms gesticulating in the cockpit. The steaming shards of flock-like cloud tissue fell towards our upturned faces. And through the condensing spray, I could see Van Eyck shaping an immense horse's head. Brilliant. Nolan had measured the man's abilities exactly. The piece of aerial marzipan sailed away on the wind, and Van Eyck followed it down. Brilliant! Manuel was working on the next cloud. As he sprayed its sides, a familiar human head appeared through the tumbling mist.
Recognize yourself, Van Eyck? You know who this is, eh?
Where are you going, Van Eyck? Can't take a joke? Oh, come on. Come back here. A cloud formed over Coral D, and within a few minutes, it had blossomed into a pristine, fair-weather cumulus. As it hung there, Nolan's black glider plunged out of the sun. He soared past the cloud, cutting away its tissue.
Now he carves. He carves a cheek. He cuts out eyes, and now a lung. Yes.
Illuminated by the afternoon sun,
yes.
The serene face of a three-year-old child.
Yes. Lips like two young leaves. The mouth. Yes.
It's beautiful, yes.
Lord.
Le gusta, Van Eyck.
Shh. Nolan's not finished.
Nolan's not finished.
Oh, Dio.
Not finished.
Cursed by some malignant virus, Nolan seemed unable to accept his own handiwork. He soared above the child's face.
Oh, what is he doing?
No. Nolan.
Hanging above us was the white image of a skull.
Quick, Senor, they are leaving. Take around your hat. Quick, Dilly, without saying.
Damn, he'll never get back.
No. Don't go. He is a genius. He's worth something, no? For Picasso, you pay. For Rembrandt. Nolan cost you nothing. Oh. Too late, Senor.
Come on, let's go home. What's that? Who is she?
Look at Van Eyck. He has met his apocalypse. Quick, Van Eyck! Into your glider again! Yes! Now you must carve the Mona Lisa!
Van Eyck was in his glider now, producing a postcard version of the Gioconda. I placed myself so I could look into the rolls. Inside was a secretary in a business suit, a chauffeur, and a white-haired woman gazing up at the cloud glider. Her expression changed, and I looked up as Nolan dived from the sun behind Van Eyck straight through the neck of the Mona Lisa.
They're firing at each other with a spray. Stop them. Go tell them they're grounded.
Tell them yourself, senor.
That's it. We're through. The season's over. Maybe next year, if you come to your senses. The clouds are closed on Coral D. Is that understood?
The lady's calling you, senor.
Which lady?
The young one. The secretary. Senor, take the hat. Don't forget the hat.
The young woman stared at my helmet.
Oh, I think the chauffeur's the only one with any money. Do you perform anywhere else?
Where are you thinking of, senorita?
Manuel. Lagoon West. Miss Chanel is holding a series of garden parties. She wondered if you'd care to perform. But if you're not interested. Of course, there'd be a large fee.
Senor!
Chanel? Leonor Chanel?
Miss Chanel is staying at Lagoon West for the summer. By the way, there's one condition. Miss Chanel will provide the sole subject matter for the sculptures. You do understand.
No, I don't think...
Then you agree.
What about the clouds?
Miss Chanel will provide the clouds.
Well, then that's it. My hand on it. I'll be seeing you, Miss...
Lafferty. Beatrice Lafferty.
Oh, yes. You will be seeing her again.
Come on. Let's get that glider into the hangar.
One moment. Over there. An angel. Is she real? Is she flesh and blood?
Leonora Chanel stepped from the limousine and walked into the desert. Her white-haired figure in its cobra skin coat wandered among the dunes. Sand rays lifted around her, disturbed by the random movements of this sauntering phantasm of the burned afternoon. Ignoring their open stings around her legs, she was gazing up at the aerial bestiary dissolving in the sky and at the white skull a mile away over Lagoon West that had smeared itself across the horizon.
Who is she, senor?
Our future employer.
But who is she?
Haven't you ever seen her on the satellite station? One of those late night shows? She loves to talk about herself.
Yes, naturally. I'm the daughter of one of the world's leading financiers.
One of the richest.
Certainly, yes. I don't think that might make me the richest woman alive.
No!
It doesn't faze me at all. Why should it? My husband? He was an
archaeologist. Oh, the Count, yes.
He piloted his own plane to his digs. His mistress was a young Lebanese woman, one of the world's foremost interpreters of Bach.
Death all round. Too bad.
Suicide.
No,
he never gave me any indication.
Devastated.
I wandered endlessly around the globe.
Ceaseless wandering.
To my Alpine manor, Palm Springs, Mykonos, Seville.
Oh, Seville. She looks very lonely.
She looks selfish.
You see her eyes? They are like jewels.
They are jewels. The skin around her eyes, crusted with jewels.
What's she looking at?
Herself.
She's always looking at herself, and people watch her. Look at Van Eyck. Keep an eye on him, will you, Manuel?
So we will be rich.
She's a mystery. I don't think she feels. At her husband's inquest, there was to be one significant exhibit.
Oh.
It was destroyed before the hearing. A mutilated portrait of Leonora. He was working on it when he died. Perhaps it would have told us more of her character.
More than she wants us to know, senor.
More than she wants us to know. Envy. That's what I felt. I was driving to Lagoon West as Nolan, Van Eyck, and Petit Manuel flew over my head. The fused silica on the surface of the dry lake bed formed an immense rainbow mirror that reflected the sand reefs, brighter even than their cloud gliders. I envied them the tremendous updrafts, more powerful than any we had known at Coral D. Oh, and those clouds, they hung like the twisted pillows of a sleepless giant. These were unstable masses of overheated air that could toss an aircraft 1,000 feet in a few seconds. As I entered the drive to the villa, behind a truck filled with lights, a dozen members of the staff were straightening lines of gilt chairs on the terrace.
Watch it.
And unrolling the
careful.
Panels of a marquee.
I said, careful! Easy does it. All right. Major.
Yes.
Major Parker. There are the clouds we promised you.
Clouds, Beatrice? Those are tigers, tigers with wings.
Your men do understand that there's to be only one subject.
Miss Chanel herself, of course.
When will your men get here?
They should be overhead just about now.
They're flying.
Oh, they're up there somewhere, lucky bastards.
You wish it were you?
Of course.
I'm glad it's not. It's dangerous, isn't it? Anything could happen. Oh, look, out on the lake in the sand yacht. Miss Chanel.
Ah, Van Eyck and Petit Manuel are putting on a welcome. This should be interesting.
They glide. For me. Carving the cloud. For me. For me. An orchid for me.
Ah, oh, sweet.
Silly, 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 silly sweet silly, man.
Sweet man. And a heart from two lips.
See that, Beatrice? That's Van Eyck's trademark. Look at Manuel come in.
What the... A parakeet.
Much more appropriate.
What does he mean by that? A silly, self-regarding
she
bird.
Doesn't look too impressed.
She's always polite. Where's your third man?
Nolan, oh, he's up there. See, just sailing backwards and forwards. Sometimes he seems so damn weary of it all. I wonder what keeps him up there.
She's watching him. Look at her eyes. Even from here.
Memories.
Burn down eyes.
Caravels without sails.
Hold my hand.
Shadowy distance.
I want you to look at something. Come inside the house. Now.
My God, she's everywhere. All the best portrait artists. Her face... But they're all too, too perfect, that's it.
What about this?
Ah, that's closer. He's caught the look. What is it, a dead Medea? She looks like a corpse.
Look at the signature.
Nolan. My God, Nolan. Were you here, then, when he painted this?
It was finished before I came, 2 months ago. She refused to have it framed.
I knew there was something.
Yes.
Then the old studio we use as a hangar at Coral D was his. I knew he was familiar with
it. It scares me. Why would Leonora ask him back?
To paint her portrait again. This time, though, it's going to be the size of the sky. An hour later, the display began, lit by the sun setting behind the mesa. Van Eyck's glider
rose towards the face of the first cloud. He tipped the wings and began to carve.
The cheekbone.
The cheekbone.
The cheekbone.
The cheekbones.
He's surpassing himself.
It's beautiful. Oh, but it's raining. The portrait's raining. Oh, it's breaking up. It's like someone just ripped it up. Oh, here comes the dwarf.
It's a tough cloud. Look at the dark edge, unpredictable. I've never seen him so nervous.
But here he comes. It's her. Oh, it's definitely her. Uh-huh. The eyes.
Well done, little dwarf.
Oh, it's tilting. The jaw. It's 100 feet long. The smile. It's an idiot smile. It's upside down. I love it.
No! No, no! Stop it! Calm down! I order!
Switch the searchlights off, will you? Thanks.
Spoil sport.
Nolan!
There's Nolan. Nolan! What can he do to top that? What's he doing? What is it, Ray? Look.
I don't understand. He's not usually so generous.
Look at it closely.
I am. Oh, I see what you mean. It's too good. He's captured her exactly.
The way my mouth turned down.
My chin held up to smooth my neck. Flesh, where it holds the imperfections.
You have
you
me.
You have me.
You have me.
You have me.
She's furious. I think her veins are going to burst.
If they do, he'll capture it.
Well, maybe you should...
Start the fireworks. Get going. Light the touch papers.
Raymond? Raymond?
Over here.
I thought maybe you'd left. I've been searching for you all along the beach.
What's wrong? What happened?
Van Eyck. He's with her. He finally got what he wants.
I don't believe it.
It's true. I saw it. I was down there by the boat looking for you. I watched him walk toward her after Nolan left.
Nolan?
I saw him on the terrace.
Hmm.
Well, at least I didn't see them. I heard them.
Come back! Nolan!
Nolan came to the French window. He was wearing that white suit. He took off, running between the tables and down the drive. Then she walked into the center of the terrace.
Come back!
She looked at the clouds and then tore the jewels from her eyes. And then that little friend of yours, Manuel.
Manuel, surely he's not involved.
He'd been hiding on the bandstand and he scuttled out on those bent little legs right in front of her.
Senora! Senora! I love you!
She's invited a whole host of guests tomorrow. I can't call it off. And even if I did...
There's no sign of Nolan or little Manuel. Is that Leonore out on the sand yacht?
Van Eyck. Squalls are whipping up those sails.
Oh, they're coming ashore. He's running.
Crazy bastard. Who's he trying to beat? Wait for the others, Van Eyck. It's no show if you're going alone. Watch the currents. They're treacherous this evening.
He's up.
So fast. Damn. He's even ahead of the crowd.
I can hardly see him. That cloud, it's bigger than... Oh, there he is. No. Oh no, he's going to hit him. Oh, I thought he'd slammed into the roof.
Oh, he's broken a wing.
Is he falling?
Oh, don't worry, he'll make it. The glider won't fall.
Oh, it's dangerous.
Yes, he'll make it. Just watch. What did I tell you? Perfect landing right on the lake. The glider's had it.
Here's Nolan and Petty Manuel.
Oh, yes, I thought they wouldn't miss this. Why bother to come, Nolan? Don't tell me you're going to fly.
I'm not. That's exactly why I'm here, Major.
Watch out.
What's this about?
Miss Chanel, the clouds are like madmen.
Don't you people expect to take risks? For clouds like these, I need a Michelangelo of the sky. What about Nolan? Is he too frightened as well?
Ask him.
I don't make a habit of speaking to the backs of people's heads.
Look at the light, woman. Half the lake's in darkness. That could mean a tornado.
Senor! Senor!
What is it, Manuel?
Senor, I can go. Let me take the glider.
Manuel, for God's sake, you'll kill
you. Senora Chanel, I will stop for you. Right now, a big storm cloud. I will do it now.
Lay off. You can't beat it, Manuel. Didn't you see what happened to Van Eyck?
Let's see what the little cripple can do, murderer. Did you speak, Beatrice?
Stop! Manuel, for God's sake! Nolan, stop him! Stop him! Manuel!
It's too late.
The glider rose into the sky and climbed across the face of the storm cloud. 50 yards from the dark billows, it was buffeted by the shifting air, but Manuel soared and began to cut away at the dark face. Drops of black rain fell across the terrace at our feet. The first outline of a woman's head appeared. Satanic eyes, lit by the open vents in the cloud.
Watch it, Manuel, watch it.
Okay, Manuel, I'm coming too.
No! Stop him! Stop that man!
Nolan climbed into his glider and took off. A moment later, Manuel's aircraft was lifted by a powerful updraft and tossed over the roof of a cloud. Fighting the insane air, Manuel plunged the glider downward and drove into the cloud again. Then, its immense face opened, and in a sudden spasm, the cloud surged forward and swallowed the glider. The crushed craft revolved in the center of the cloud. Dismembered pieces of fuselage churned about in the dissolving face. As it reached the lake, the cloud began its violent end. Pieces of the face slewed sideways. The mouth was torn off. An eye exploded. It vanished in a last brief squall.
Come on, Bee. Let's go to the lake before it's too...
No. No. Drive me back to the house.
I have to get the body.
She's back there. Watching us. She's back there, standing on the terrace with Van Eyck. Don't they care? Raymond, listen to me. Don't they care? He's over there. I can see him on the sand. Oh, lightning. He's curled up like a drowned monkey. Raymond, is he alive?
Not a chance.
Come back. Come back, Raymond.
It's a tornado. But no, those clouds anywhere. We have to get out of here fast.
Raymond, look. Nolan, he's flying inside the cloud. He's flying around the funnel. God.
I saw the black winged glider circling under the umbrella of the tornado. His wings held steady in the revolving air around the funnel. Like a pilot fish, he soared in, as if steering the tornado towards Leonora's villa. 20 seconds later, when it struck the house, I lost sight of him.
Quick! Get out onto the lake! Head for that vault over there! Doc! Doc! Doc!
As the tornado moved away, shreds of canvas and peacock feathers fell around us. We waited half an hour before approaching the house. Hundreds of smashed glasses and broken chairs littered the terrace. At first, I could see no sign of Leonora, although her face was everywhere. The portraits with their slashed profiles strewn on the damp tile.
She's over there.
Leonora's body lay among the broken tables near the bandstand, half wrapped in a bleeding canvas. Her face was as bruised now as the storm cloud Manuel had tried to carve.
There's Van Eyck. Hanging.
Hanging. Suspended by the neck from a tangle of electric wiring. Can you see, Nolan?
He was driving that whirlwind here. Somehow he was controlling it.
And now?
Who knows? I don't even see any sign of his glider.
I walked across the damp terrace to where Leonora lay. I began to cover her with the shreds of canvas. The torn faces of herself. I took Beatrice Lafferty to live with me in Nolan's studio in the desert. And I never flew gliders again. Clouds carry too many memories. 3 months ago, a man came to our door.
Just saw the gliders outside. Thought I'd stop by.
Mm-hmm.
Not in too good shape, are they? Funny thing, I was down at Red Beach 4 weeks ago.
Oh,
yeah. Saw a man flying a glider. Carving the stratospheres way up, oh, way, way up there. making what looked like jewels. Children's faces. One was a dwarf's head. Funny thing, that. Well, I just thought it might be someone you knew.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Well, just a thought, that's all.
We've been waiting.
Yes, it's true. We sit here, my wife and I. We sit here listening to the voices of the night, waiting for a dark wind glider. A man who will come in on the wind and carve images of seahorses and unicorns and dwarfs and jewels and children's faces just for us.
Well, could be I seen him.
Yes, maybe you did.
The Cloud Sculptors of Coral D by J.G. Ballard. Dramatized by Margaret Hollingsworth. Starring Richard Donat as Parker, Peter Blay as Manuel, and John Bourgeois as Nolan and the Man. Pat Collins as Leonora and Brenda Robbins as Bee. The series script editor is Sandra Rabinovich. Casting consultant, Beth Russell. Original music was by Timothy Clark. Recording engineer was Glenn McLaughlin. Sound effects by Bill Robinson. And production assistant, Kate Nickerson. The Cloud Sculptors of Coral D was produced in Toronto by series executive producer William Lane. Next week, low-flying aircraft.
From the makers of Coldwater Omo. At the peace conference, Baron von Kurt and Mrs. Peel were searching amongst the guests for John Steed.
Any luck?
No sign of him. But Jose's men insist that he's here. You know, you said that you don't like crowds. Steed doesn't either.
Ah, then he'll be in one of the anterooms. This way. You take that side, I'll take this.
It was then that Mrs. Peel found Rolla dead.
Steed! Oh, Steed! Oh, no.
And the Baron found Mintoff dead.
Oh, Signor Steed. Oh, no.
Baron! Baron, I found him in the other room. He's been killed.
Yes. Yes, there is another body of Steed here. What does it all mean?
The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers. Episode 5 of this story, in which John Steed gets back into the action, and Mrs. Peel and the Baron hear too many arguments and too many olays. John Steed, still held a prisoner in the damp room beneath the bullring, strained at the handcuffs that held him to the bedrail. He knew he had to get out before one of the four men impersonating him got to the peace conference and planted a percussion bomb in the chairman's gavel. What Steed didn't appreciate, of course, was that each of the agents thought he was the only one looking like John Steed. The result of this was that every time they met each other, they thought they'd met the real Steed. Perova had met both Rother and Mintoff, and had, without hesitation, killed them both. Mrs. Peel and the Baron were quite bewildered. So, for that matter, was Captain Jose.
Yes. Astonishing. Amazing. If I hadn't seen it for myself, I would never have believed it. Both look exactly alike.
And both look exactly like John Steed.
But which one is Steed?
Neither. Both are duplicates. How the transformation has been achieved, we will never know. But there it is. Two dead steeds.
I think we need a drink. Don't you, Emma?
A large one.
This is very, very serious.
A guard!
Signor Capitano.
Give orders. All the guards alerted. Shoot to kill.
What? Si, senor. What does that mean, Captain?
Mrs. Peel, it is a difficult decision. But it is clear that someone wants to infiltrate the conference.
There must be a plan to wreck it somehow. And someone has created the duplicate steeds in order to do so.
Well?
Well, under these circumstances, we must conclude that the real steed is dead. And so, any other steeds must be shot on sight.
But John Steed was far from dead. He was working on the bed rail, bending the metal to breaking point. Arcos and Markin looked up occasionally from their game of cards.
It should not be long now before we hear the news, Arcos.
I have no doubt that Nadine will achieve success, Markin. He has complete instructions. The whole of the conference room will be blown to little pieces.
Our job will be over. We can go home.
And claim the money. Retire with the satisfaction of a job well done.
What about him?
Markin indicated Steed with a greasy finger.
Easy.
I don't think things will ever get to that state, gentlemen.
Steed gave one last enormous tug at the bed rail. The rail broke away.
Arcos!
Steed, using the rail, made for Markin. He swung the rail. Arcos made for his gun, reaching across the table. Steed brought the bed rail down over his hand. The gun went off harmlessly. Steed got in a terrific punch smack on the right spot of Arcos's jaw.
That'll teach you to click your castanets at me.
Doing all right at the moment, aren't you, Steed? The rest of the escape was easy. Steed got out of the deserted bull ring and into the nearest taxi.
Hablo usted en inglés?
English. Sí, little signore.
Then you will take me to the peace conference and accept my grandfather's gold watch as a temporary payment.
Sí, señor. Okay. Sí.
It didn't take long to reach the Baron's home where the peace conference was about to begin. Steed's taxi drew up just as the fourth disguised agent, Giorgio, arrived in his car.
Excuse me, I've just seen someone I know.
Steed walked swiftly across to Giorgio's car. Before the astonished agent could react, Steed opened the car door, found himself gazing at his own face, and said,
I hate to do this to those noble features.
And threw a punch at Giorgio. Giorgio rode it and grabbed a gun. The two Steeds grappled. In the struggle, the gun went off. Giorgio collapsed, slumped forward over the front seat. That's four down, Steed, and one to go.
Olé.
Meanwhile, Perova, now the only disguised seed left, had got into the conference room and was working on planting the small bomb in the chairman's gavel. It took a little time, and the delegates were making their way along the corridor as he completed the task. Perova placed the gavel on the table at the right hand of the chairman's seat and disappeared through the French windows.
I now have to wait. The big bang.
John Steed entered the building at top speed. The two guards at the door had no time to raise their rifles. Steed said,
Good afternoon, buenas tardes.
And hit their heads together. He then made off up the corridor at a furious pace, crashing into the conference room. Just as the chairman, raising the gavel, said,
Now, gentlemen, may I call the meeting to order?
No, put that thing down. Here, give it to me.
Steed hurled himself at the chairman, grabbed at the gavel, hesitated for a fraction of a second, and then crashed his way through the windows out into the grounds. Steed threw the gavel as far away as possible and crouched in the bushes.
Phew. They should give me two ears and a tail for that.
The effect upon the conference was catastrophic.
Try to blow us up.
He wants to... After him! After him! Get after Steed! Kill Steed! Don't let him get away! You cover the exit! Search the grounds! Don't worry! He won't get away!
Emma Peel, who had witnessed all this along with the other guests, wasn't so sure.
You know, Baron, it doesn't make sense.
You're telling me. I cannot understand what is going on in my own home. Which Steed was that?
Well, the point is, whoever it was didn't blow up the conference.
Pardon?
He didn't blow up the place. He had the bomb in his hand, but he crashed his way out into the open with it.
No alternative. He was surprised. The guards were after him.
I wonder. You don't think that... I mean, you don't imagine that he was the real Steed?
Not a chance. Come on, let's get out into the grounds. I know them better than anyone. I want to get in on this, too.
Out on the grounds, John Steed dodged from cover to cover. Perova had heard the sound of the explosion and thought his plan to wreck the conference and kill its delegates had succeeded. But then he heard the orders shouted by Captain Jose and thought they were after him. He also went into hiding. Mrs. Peel, separated temporarily from the Baron, was crawling her way through the undergrowth, gun in hand, when...
Mrs. Peel.
Stay where you are. Don't move.
Me? The real me?
Stay still and put your hands up.
Mrs. Peel, Emma, if I wasn't the real me, how would I know who you are?
Whoever impersonates John Steed must have done their homework. They know all about me. Don't move.
Look, your last birthday, I took you to Quag's for supper.
Stay still.
We had caviar... quail's eggs, smoked sturgeon, lobster thermidor, and wild strawberries out of season.
Hmm? Well, how did you find that out?
Well, I happened to be there. You had two helpings of strawberries.
You could have followed us. Anyone could have seen that.
Then we went back to my apartment, and no one could have seen what went on back there.
Oh?
At least I hope not.
I'm not convinced. What was I wearing?
At Quag's? Or the flat? You had an embroidered kaftan.
And shoes?
Gold, but you kicked them off before we got home. Threw them under the settee. And on the settee, you got a little tipsy and very, very amorous.
Steed! Oh, Steed, it really is you.
It is.
Oh, Steed.
Over here!
Now, lie still.
Steed? Steed, what is going on?
There's no time to explain it all, but we've got to grab the real villain of the piece. His name is Arcos, and he's hiding out in an old bullring near here.
Well, you may have convinced me, but it won't be as easy with them. They've got orders to kill you. They'll shoot first and talk later.
I'll manage somehow.
Steed, was I very amorous?
I still bear the scars. Think you can pinch a car, Mrs. Peel?
Think? I passed car theft instructions with an A+.
Well, off you go, then. Bring it back there by the trees. I'll be waiting.
Right.
Mrs. Peel shot out of cover and made for the car park. A short while later, Mrs. Peel arrived in a smart new car, parked it at the place agreed upon, opened the door, and moved over to greet Steed. But it was Perova who stepped out from behind the tree.
So, you have brought me a car. How very thoughtful.
Steed!
I am afraid not.
Perova raised a revolver, pointed it straight at Mrs. Peel, his finger tightened over the trigger. But the Baron crashed his way through the bushes and with his sword lunged forward.
Oh, no! Olé.
One blow, and that's the last of them out of the way. You're on your own from now on, Steed.
Avengers. Listen every evening, Monday to Friday, to John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers, brought to you by the makers of Coldwater Omo.
There's a place like it in every city, a place which never sleeps, where life comes in all its sordid flavors, a place where no one asks questions, where a memory could lose itself and lie low, waiting. The stage is set. The burlesque is about to begin. There is a peephole, if you like. You can see it all through the vanishing point.
Sure is proletarian bar.
Like all beer parlors, Steph.
I guess. It's just that I don't like drinking beer.
I like beer.
You're so skinny you can drink what you want. Hey, look at this babe.
Hooker.
Yeah? You think so?
Sure, I've seen her on the block. They come down in here all the time.
Tempting, isn't it?
If you're willing to take the risk. What's the matter with your students?
I'm sick of all the young stuff.
Well, tell me about it.
Really, it gets to be meaningless, you know? Christ, I'll be glad when class is quit. How long have we got to go? 2 weeks? 2 weeks and a breather. My nerves are shot. I'm up to 2 packs a day.
But you had it all down pat.
I'll never have it all down pat.
The place got the best video screen in town.
Most of these rock videos are the same, though.
I've heard.
Mindless montage.
Oh, the professor speaks.
Hey, well, they're crap, man. You don't really like them.
Sure I do. I told you, I come in here all the time.
I can guess why. To hit on a hooker, right?
To hell with you, man. Let's go grab a couple more beer.
They got strippers in this place?
Yeah. That's one right there. Standing at the cash register, the brunette.
With the red dragon on the back?
Yeah. Waiting to go on.
So what's happening this weekend?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll visit my parents. My wife wants a recipe for my mother.
My dad wants a rifle for Christmas. Got any ideas?
About an AK-47.
A hunting rifle, jerk.
So what do I know about rifles?
Think I might go skiing.
You ski? I didn't know you were into that.
Well, I'm not, but this babe asked me to go. Friend of one of my students. It's something to do. Christ, I hate living alone. You've got a family. You're okay.
Maybe. Sometimes I get boxed in.
We'll try living without a woman. It's a drag, man.
Hey, you could always try putting an ad in a newspaper in Manila. Come on, Stavrogin. You get plenty of women.
But the quality's dropping. This winter I'm into bees.
Yeah?
Overweight, a bit thrashed.
Yeah. Think it has something to do with your age?
Could be. You know, I just can't get down and do any work. The department's been bugging me to write some articles. But hell, who cares? Hey, look at this guy. Is he really crippled or not? I swear he was limping with the other foot the last time he passed.
I like his outfit.
What do you suppose he is, a crippled biker?
A pimp.
Yeah, he's a biker. Look at the tattoos.
Oh, he might ride a bike. He's a pimp. We shut the vids off. Stripper's coming on.
Jesus, what a zoo.
I love the way she grabs that pole and slides down it.
Yeah.
You get some real dogs in here, but this one seems all right. Tall.
Are all the bars around the triangle like this?
Pretty much. You want to move on?
In a minute.
Hey, you know something? She looks like Maxine.
That's what I thought.
Same hair, same eyes, about the same height, maybe a little heavier. Unreal. How long has it been?
5 years.
5 years?
I've never gotten over her, you know?
No. Well, I thought perhaps you had. You don't speak of her so often.
I just lie awake at night and think and...
Life's a drag.
Isn't it? I mean, isn't it really?
Imagine imagine if it were her? I mean, when she left you, she was going to a big job in the government, a great new career as a female bureaucrat, and now, 5 years after divorce, here she is, a stripper.
It's not her.
She's not bad. I wouldn't mind.
Is this why you come down to the Triangle?
To watch ladies undress? Not particularly. It's just such an opposite to my normal routine. The university, my family. I like to submerge. Nobody knows who I am down here. Nobody gives a damn. I can be anonymous. Voyeur.
Are you always just a voyeur, Russ?
What do you mean?
Well, do you have any little adventures?
I'm not adverse to a little adventure, but I don't seek it.
Care to elaborate?
Read my memoirs. You know, Stavrogan, if you want to keep your world together, never let anyone know where your bodies are buried.
I know you. You don't pass up any opportunities.
Do you? I'd like more beer.
Finish mine.
Don't you want to move on?
No. Let's watch this one to the end.
Who?
The chick in the bar, the stripper, the one we saw on Friday night. It is Maxine.
Bullshit.
It is, Russ. I've been down there every night. Listen, man, I know my wife.
You talked to her?
No, but I've been watching her. I just had a feeling about it that night. It wouldn't go away. I couldn't sleep. I just couldn't get the possibility out of my mind, so I went back, and it's her, all right. You remember how thin she used to be, almost anorexia? Now she's filled out, more voluptuous. 5 years on the meat rack.
Did she recognize you?
I don't think she saw me. I hung back.
You're absolutely sure?
Oh, Russ, you haven't heard the half of it. I felt like throwing up. She's a hooker, man. Not only is she stripping, but she's peddling her ass.
Now, how do you know that, Stav? I mean, not all exotic dancers are prostitutes.
This one is. The goddamn waiter says to me, "How would you like a piece of that?" And I say, "Who wouldn't?" And he says, "You got $100. You can have it." That's what the waiter said.
He's putting you on.
You'd think so, eh? I followed her. I saw her soliciting right on the sidewalk on Johnson Street, corner of Johnson and Broad, outside the butcher shop. The block where all the hookers hang out.
You actually see her pick anyone up?
Oh, yeah. It made me sick, Russ.
But you have to forget it, man. She's nothing to do with you now.
I know, but it was a shock.
Yeah, it's a shock, all right. Chris will freak right out when she hears this.
Oh, do me a favor, Russ. Don't tell your wife.
Whatever you say, Stav.
Really, don't say a word. The fewer who know about this, the better.
It's not your fault.
I feel weird. One of the reasons we split up was because she said the marriage was stifling her career. Her career.
Stav.
She said she couldn't have a kid because it would interfere with her career. I neglected my own work so I could write her essays. I wrote her way through university. Me. So when she graduates, it's, "See you later, prof. I got plans." Selfish, right?
I suppose so, but...
I loved her. 6 years down the tubes. Our marriage.
All this should be behind you.
How could I have been so wrong about someone? I knew she was unfaithful. I knew she was selfish, but I reconciled myself to her leaving because in the end I thought it was for her own good. I never envisioned this.
Me neither. Things obviously haven't worked out for her.
Yeah? Maybe this is fate. Did you ever suspect she was a whore?
Me?
You knew her pretty good.
I don't know. I believe all women entertain that fantasy some time or another.
You remember that guy she said she was in love with?
The accountant.
He must have been a pimp. Monday night, when I realized what was going down, when I realized what she'd become, I felt pretty low. But by Tuesday, I felt better. Even good about it, you know what I mean? I thought to myself, the hell with her. Why shouldn't I buy her for a night? That would be a laugh.
It would be something, all right.
Well, that's what I keep thinking. I have to keep my sense of humor. So I decided I had to buy her.
Did you?
I sat and watched her from the car. But you know, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't face her.
Probably just as well.
I just don't want her to know I know. But I have to know what she's like.
What do you mean?
Is she different? Or is it the same person I was married to?
Forget it. It's not worth the aggravation.
No? Wouldn't you be curious?
Well, I don't have your point of view. I'm not emotionally involved.
You go with her. I'll give you the money.
You're not serious.
$100. You can tell me all I need to know.
You're crazy. I'm a married man.
That didn't stop you with Andrea.
That was years ago. Anyway, I never went through with it.
Whatever you say, my friend. But you'll do this for me.
No, man, no. Maxine? I just couldn't.
You can tell me all I need to know.
No.
You wanted her when you saw her on that stage.
But that was different. I didn't know it was Maxine then.
So you're saying you don't think she's changed?
Is that what I'm saying?
You're saying she's the same person she was 5 years ago when she was my wife.
Well, I suppose I am.
Did you know she was a whore then? Or maybe you're saying she isn't a whore now, despite the evidence, despite the appearances. Who is the real Maxine? That's all I want to know, Russ.
What's it doing outside? Still raining?
Buckets. It will be all weekend, they say.
So what are you doing?
Waiting for a friend.
Waiting for a friend, huh? I don't think he's going to show. Let's go talk.
Talk? My conversation doesn't come cheap.
I'm aware of your needs, Maxie. Where can we go?
Well, if you want a drink, we can go across the street.
Well, where do you live?
What's on your mind?
Come on, Maxie. Let's go.
Okay. Follow me. There's a place I can use around the corner.
Handy.
Well, I see you look the same.
You look great.
I do? I'm 34 and fading fast.
Change of scenery might help.
Here we are. A jump, isn't it? I'm on the third floor.
Who was that at the door?
Just the guy.
Is he really crippled or is that stick a weapon?
Don't worry, you're safe with me.
Well, Leo, I saw him selling dope in the bar the other night.
Ah, so I did see you there.
Jesus, Maxie, where are you?
At the top. You gotta go all the way.
Do I get mugged now or later?
Come in, Russ.
Great view of the street. I've always dreamed of having a place like this. Right down in the ruined core of the city. Right at the locus of the triangle, where all the street action happens.
The triangle.
The golden triangle. This block is where it all happens. This street and two others. All the bars,
clubs, terminal cafes.
The Golden Triangle. Yeah, that's a good name for it. Beer, whiskey?
Whiskey, I think. Thanks.
Neat, right?
Yeah. Cheers.
I knew he'd send you.
How so?
Because he has something to prove.
What? Perhaps I came out of my own curiosity.
I bet.
Don't bother me when you two split.
Yeah.
Anyway, your new incarnation has me mesmerized.
You've been with a hooker before. No? I would have thought the convenience of it might appeal to you. No hassles. Men appreciate that.
That can be hassles. Here. $100, isn't it?
You want me? Interesting. You never did before.
It's different now.
Sure. No hassles.
So what is it, Maxie? A hard luck story? Or is it adventure? In the existential sense? Or is it pure horniness? Well,
it's the last refuge of unskilled labor.
Well, maybe, but you're not unskilled. What about your business degree?
I'm a master of bugger all.
You had a good job in the government, didn't you? A policy analyst with one of the ministries? Mm-hmm. Or am I thinking of someone else?
Someone else.
What about the person who gave a $50 stuffed dog to my daughter a few Christmases ago? That was you, wasn't it?
Someone else. So, how is Stav? Does he still eat liver and onions?
I don't know. Does he?
It was a secret vice. I couldn't stand it.
I've never seen him at it. All he does is smoke. Still in love with you.
Still? He's a fool.
You blew his mind.
He thinks you're the reason.
The reason?
Yes, he thinks you and I had an affair.
How could he get that idea?
From Christine.
My wife told him that?
I thought you knew. This is his money, isn't it?
You mean he's been going around all this time thinking you and I had an affair?
Maybe because of your trip back east.
What trip?
Spring of 79. You were at a conference, remember? We met on the street, accidentally, remember? I was back visiting my parents.
We had a few drinks, that's all. It was an innocent encounter. Stavrogin believes. He never said anything.
Because he blamed me.
No such thing as innocence.
You're a very slow boy. Because I take my clothes off in a pub, I'm a prostitute, right?
I'm only going by what Stav told me. He said you were hooking. You are, aren't you?
What do you think?
I don't know. I just assume.
Oh.
What are you then, an undercover cop? Or is this some on-the-job research for the ministry? And what were you doing on the street?
I told you, waiting for a friend. Oh. Disappointed. Another drink?
Yeah.
I like to dance. I've always liked to dance. Stav never danced. So I fell out of the habit when we were together.
What's that?
Just the neon flashing.
Oh, it is. It's the cops.
There must be an accident. Don't worry about it. Sit down. Tell me what you've been up to.
Well, there's something going on down there. A fight. Yeah, there's that dope dealer. And somebody else. It looks like Stab.
Oh, no. It would be just like the fool.
It never stops. Life in the triangle. Strange us meeting like this. So improbable.
Not really. Given the odds, I'd say it was as probable as Pascal's triangle.
Triangle, I get. Pascal, I don't.
I thought you knew everything about triangles.
Math isn't my scene.
Too sophisticated for you, huh? You know, I've been trying to cut that sort of thing out of my life. Intellectuality, Lee. The thing I liked about you, Russ, the thing I've always liked is that you have a coarse side.
Coarse?
You take chances. You have imagination. And honestly, imagination was the one thing my life with Steph didn't have.
So you're living out a fantasy.
If you live it, it's no fantasy.
Madonna whore.
Me?
It's the Madonna whore syndrome. That's what's wrong with Steph. That's what's wrong with all of us.
That's so. Save it for the undergrads, prof. Where is he tonight?
Christmas shopping. He's buying a rifle for his old man. Now, look here, Maxine. I always thought of you and Stav as a pair. You belong together. What do you think?
What do I think? I think I've got $100 here, so maybe I can get some action.
Like what?
Like an exotic male dancer.
I don't dance.
Bullshit. I can make you all dance.
My God! Ah, Russ.
So you found me.
What the hell are you doing?
Setting the sights. It's throwing to the right. $700. What do you think? The old man should be pleased, yes?
When I found your note at the house, it scared the shit out of me. You gave me the impression you were going to kill yourself. What happened to your eye?
I fell.
Fell? Where were you last night? I came past about one. The lights were on. So was the stereo.
I knew you were busy.
Don't you want to hear?
What's the point?
For Christ's sake, put that rifle down. I want to talk to you.
I think that last shot missed.
What's the target? That tree?
It's not a tree, man.
No, it looks like a tree to me.
It's not a tree.
She's not what you think, Stav.
You're a bastard.
It's not her, Stav. It isn't Maxine. It looks like her from a distance. The resemblance is amazing. And from your point of view, I can see how you were deceived. When you get close in, why, anyone can see it isn't her.
It isn't her.
No.
You sure?
Absolutely. Listen, you've been living under a misconception. Nothing is or was the way you think it is. I'm your friend, for Christ's sakes.
You ever think of murder, Russ?
As a habit, no. But the thought has crossed my mind a couple of times. It's in everyone, isn't it?
I was listening to the car radio, and there was a news item about this body they found in the park. A woman. Been there 5 years.
So they said. Unbelievable.
5 years under some shrubs. They say she was strangled. How the hell would they know that?
I don't know. I believe that some guy thinks it's his wife.
Really?
That's what I heard. She was last seen drinking in one of the bars in the Triangle.
Not a friend of yours by any chance?
You never know.
Look at those lousy ravens up there. I should blast one of them.
Bad luck, man.
Yeah? I guess I don't need any more of that. Everything used to be so golden.
I mean, wasn't it? I'd wake up in the morning. Sunlight would be streaming through the blinds. Both of us would be naked in bed, our bodies just golden. Not a lousy care in the world.
Except tenure.
Yeah, except tenure.
So why do you say we get out of here, eh? I mean, you look like you walked into a side of beef.
Well, I did, actually.
Hey, forget about it. Hey, listen, I know this joint in the triangle that has excellent liver and onions on the menu. You into that?
Liver and onions?
I've heard it's good for the soul.
I never knew you were into liver and onions.
Hey, you got nothing else happening, have you?
Well, I was supposed to meet this babe on campus, but... Who was she? Chick in the bar, the one you checked out.
Just a woman. And certainly not Maxine.
A whore.
Yeah. You could easily confuse her with a Madonna. Distance deceives, Dad.
Doesn't it?
Let's go.
The golden triangle, eh? Okay.
Good. Who knows? We might run into some golden bodies, yes?
Time, it has been said, is just a device to stop everything from happening at once. An innocent encounter in the past? Or shall we just say an innocent encounter once upon a time? In a time and place occupying that fourth corner of the eternal triangle, the vanishing point.
The Golden Triangle by Lawrence Russell. Ty Haller was heard as Stav, Tom Heaton as Russ, and Janet Wright as Maxine. Technical operations were by Gene Lovrock, with sound effects by Joe Silva and Chris Cutress, and the production assistant was Dagmar Kafanka. Original music was by John Allison. The series script editor is Sandra Rabinovich. The original musical theme is by John Roby, and the voice of introduction is David Calderisi. The Golden Triangle was recorded on location and mixed at CBC Vancouver, produced and directed by John Giuliani. The executive producer of Vanishing Point is William Lane. Next week, it's The Silenian Test, a thought-provoking science fiction drama by well-known Canadian journalist David Lewis Stein. Until then, I'm Art Cuthbert, wishing you good night.
Good evening, and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian Serafic Panopoli and Stevie Farnaby.